January 13th, 1975.
It is. The great actor in the sky. Absolutely. Speaking of showbiz, I am delighted to report that I have received, like 5 million letters from people who saw me on that kid show. Did you see me on that kid show? Did you hear about it? You heard about it. Well, it's just, I was on Wonderama. You know that show? I'll tell you one thing about kid shows. They really... At least that type. They're far more surrealistic than shows for grown-ups. For example, the act that followed me was a rat race. It had rats racing. And they really did. They raced. And that's a terrific act to have follow you. I mean, you rats racing. And they wanted me to head thump on that show, which I did. I did one of my rare... appearances head thumping, because I don't like to hurl pearls before swine. I'm very careful, because the kids appreciated that. I mean, you know, adults just kind of look at you funny and hand you aspirin. But, I must say, though, that the kid shows, we've never talked much about kid shows on our thing here. And that's a very special breed of showbiz people, the people who do kid shows. Yeah, that's a very special crowd. And before we do anything else about the kid show world, if you give me you in there? Oh, thank you. All right, George, that's very good. A cup of hemlock. Very nice. Very good. Thank you, Lee. Courtesy of the sales department. Yes. It's spring, of course, and they're passing around hemlock here. You know how it is, the sap. Yeah. Who's the sap? Well, that's the sales manager. Would you please? 1, 2, 3, 4, and spy. Hit it now. Alright, I've got a thing, eh? Oh, all together, let's go. You mind if I fall in here with old boots? Oh, You like that? What is it about that thing that does it? Would you please, Al, please, over there, the big old commercial machine there, it's chock-a-block tonight, just filled with little goodies. Hit the machine, please. Hit it, please. Yeah, yeah, very good. Speaking of kid shows, are you curious about kid shows? I mean, a lot of people, you know, this is a subject of, well, it's just universal. I mean, there's always a kid show on television. And the people who do them are a very special crowd of showbiz types. I've seen some unbelievable stuff happen around kid shows. At one time, I did a kid show. I filled in for a guy doing a kid show on television. And, you know, it was the kind with puppets. And there was this puppeteer. And he'd hide behind what looked like a little fake stage. And I would spend a whole hour every day talking to a turtle and a giraffe. And when you do that a couple of weeks running, you start to have things. You know, you start to hear voices coming out of the air conditioning system. And you know, the trouble is this turtle. See, there was a turtle, and his name was Clarence. And, yes, Clarence, it's a good American turtle. And he was green, and he had these two black eyes with a yellow spot in the middle. And Clarence would talk to me every day, and he would tell me, you know, what he did the day before. That was his whole thing. So I'd say, well, what did you do yesterday, Clarence, after I left you? And Clarence would say, well, he had this squeak little voice. Now, wow. I watched television. And I says, well, you watched television. Did you see anything good there? No. I said, now, come on, Clarence. I mean, you do not bite the hand that feeds you. And then there'd be a long, pregnant pause, and he'd reach over and bite me. Well, that was the opening gag, Austin. The kids loved it. You know, the kids loved the same opening gag all the time, Clarence biting the hand that fed him. Now, we had the only talking giraffe. You know, giraffes don't talk. You know that. It's a silent animal. And it was kind of startling to hear a giraffe spoke in a low, feminine voice. It was a sexy giraffe. And apparently the giraffe and the turtle were having some kind of a thing. It was what the, you know, they built an inner plot there, which would have produced one hell of a strange case of, what do they call it, miscognition? but nevertheless, the never-never land that the kid people work in begins to affect them. And I got so that this turtle was a real character to me. And I just really, I got so I knew him. And I also, by the way, got so I didn't like him very well. You can get to hate your character. And I talked to this turtle, and then I tried to cut him out. You know, the turtle insists, the terrible scene stealer. You know, like the Cookie Monster and all that stuff. Hey, you know, I just wonder how many kids who are growing up at this point, you know, they're little kids now, maybe they're 4 or 5 or 3 or something like that. How many of them, like, say, 40 years from now, they're going to be lying on a couch there somewhere, see? And their whole life is gone, you know, Kugelberg, and they can't figure out why. See, the guy's all of a sudden, he's gained 700 pounds because he can't help himself. See, every time he goes to the A&P, he buys chocolate chip cookies and stuff. You know, he just can't help it. He's just driven by total forces beyond which he has no control. He's got the, you know, just terrible. It's like a guy that's got the bourbon monkey on his back, and he just can't stop, you know. So he's laying there on a couch, and the doctor says, will you please go back over there again? I'd like to start. Remember last week we were saying how you hate your mother. Now, if we could start there, maybe we'd get to the point. He's been there for 9 years, you see, on the couch. And he's laying there, and he's trying to get to that moment of truth that they call in the psychological world the aha moment. You've heard of the aha experience, yes. That's the moment he says, aha, it was at that point that it all started to unravel. Well, he's laying there, see, and he says, I'll tell you, doctor, I just don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do. I'm just, please, would you please pass the fake Newtons? I'm sorry, Doc. I just, you know, I eat 17 pounds of cookies a day, and I don't know what to do about it. That thing's laying out of... All of a sudden, he says, oh, I know. Oh, yes. Oh, wow. It's green. I remember it's green. It's a cookie. Oh, it's the Cookie Monster. Yes, I just wonder how many kids have been turned into cookie freaks by watching the Cookie Monster. And it's subliminal, of course. You know, the Cookie Monster, all he ever says is, cookie. He didn't say anything else. And he's fat. You notice that. He's big and round. He's just, cookie. And they shove a chocolate chip cookie down in his beak. Of course, the Cookie Monster, it's hard to tell what kind of a creature it is. The Cookie Monster does not eat dinner. One feeds the Cookie Monster. He is fed. And you've seen this. Let's get on. We have so many commercials here. That's one thing you learn about kid shows, you know. They really do commercials. Let's see what we got here. I'll tell you. One of the funniest things I ever saw in a television studio happened one time when a friend of mine who did a kid show, and he really hated television. This guy, I mean, he really hated it. And once in a while you run into somebody in any one of the media, like even legitimate stage actors, for example. They hate the theater. I knew a stage actor who, you know, really good actor, who could not stand a theater. With him, it was simply a job, you know. He went there and he did his thing, and he did it very well. He won prizes. But, man, when it came to getting up there and giving speeches about how wonderful a theater was, no way. He says, a bunch of creeps, is what he used to say all the time, a bunch of creeps. Well, he was a very good Hamlet, too, and still is. So you can see why he was torn there. You know, when you're a very good Hamlet and you hate the theater, you've got problems. Bunch of creeps. He'd come back and he had this skull, you know, and he kept it on his mantelpiece. And I said, whose skull is that? Had an elegant name like Porterfield. And all guys in the theater have names like that, see. Porterfield Wingate. And I said, Porterfield, whose skull is that? He says, don't ask. And I said, well, I am going to ask Porterfield Wingate, whose skull is that? He says, I'm glad you asked. And I said, all right, lay it on me. Whose skull is that? Is that Yorick's? He says, Yorick, my foot. And I said, well, whose was it? He says, my first damn agent, that's who. I said, how did you manage to get his skull? Usually it's the other way around. The agent gets the actor's skull. He says, well, caught him on a dark night back at a Schubert Theater. I caught the guy with a sharp blow in the back of the neck. And I said, gee, that's interesting, Porter Wingate. Have they interviewed you in the Times about your life in the theater? Numbskulls, he says, they would never interview somebody who tells the truth. And I says, you mean you don't like the theater? He says, a bunch of creeps. And we sat and played pinochle that night. So being in the theater, you know, from time to time myself, I can say that there are creeps, there are finks, there are slobs, there are a few good guys. There's a whole crowd of mediocrities. And, you know, it's like any other business. You use car business, you know, six of one, half of the other. But some of the most exotic people I've ever known in all of showbiz are guys who work kid shows because they're isolated. A kid show performer never gets reviewed. Clive Barnes will not review the Cookie Monster. You know, the guy that plays the Cookie Monster could be dedicated to creating that character, which is an unforgettable character. But he does not get a review. No way. He will not star. You know, can't you just see Marquee, new play, Alfred Miller, you know, Albert Miller, new play, starring Cookie Monster, entitled Fig Newtons Forever? No way, you know. It's a thankless task. And this buddy of mine, who is a very elegant man, oh, truly elegant, really elegant person. In fact, he was the only guy I've ever known who seriously wore morning trousers and a morning coat. Now, why he did this, I do not know, but he did. He wore. And you'd go over to this guy's house. Have you ever seen people that actually lived like guys you see in bad 1930s movies? Maybe that's where they got it. I don't know, watching late television. And he parroted himself after David Niven, with a touch of the late Clifton Webb. Do you remember Clifton Webb? And he used to like to think of himself as that character that Clifton Webb always played. Who did Clifton Webb play? He played a whole series. Mr. Who? Come on, remember? And he was an elegant bachelor. And he was always battling with kids in this series. Mr. Who? Now, why do I know all this stuff about movies? Well, I am not a movie buff. I am just the victim like everybody else. You know, deluged with mediocrity all my life. Who was Mr. Who? All right, I'll give you a clue. The character that he was, his name, you know, the character's name, was also the name of a model of the Plymouth automobile. Plymouth, yeah. Not, his name was not Mr. Duster. I'll give you that for starters right away. What was his name in that character? You can't remember the name of the guy? Well, I'm not going to tell you that. You'll just have to look that up. And he made about four or five big, successful movies. You remember Clifton Webb, don't you? All right. I'll bet you'd be surprised to know that Clifton Webb, usually everyone thought of him as some kind of an elegant Englishman or something. Very elegant. No, you'll never guess where Clifton Webb is from. No way. Boston. Huh? Fort Wayne, Indiana. Okay? So you guys who think you know what an Indiana person is like, everybody thinks an Indiana, you know, it's going to be a Herb Shriner type, you know, walking around kicking pumpkins, you know, saying things like, "Aw, shucks." Well, some of the more elegant people in this world have come from Indiana, among them Clifton Webb. And, of course, you can't ignore Ezra Pound. Was also from the same town. That'll throw you. Fort Wayne. You laugh at Fort Wayne. Well, Ezra Pound did not come from Darien, you slob. But Clifton Webb, he played this character, and this character was Mr. He never had a first name. He was just called Mr. Something. And he played three or four of these roles, and he was really successful at them. And the opening scene, he was like the opposite of Dr. Spock. He came into this household. That was the opening film. Came into this household, and there was a bunch of real wild, screaming, nutty kids. Real mean, rotten kids. And Mr. Blank came into this household, and within 30 seconds, had them eating out of his hand like squirrels, eating peanuts in spring. Tougher than hell on him. And he'd use these real sardonic, cutting remarks. Cut the kids down, you know, make them into coleslaw sitting at the breakfast table. He'd say, "One would expect that of an animal like you." And the kid, what, you know? Who was it? What was the name of the character? I don't know why my friends are so lacking in culture. I really don't. But nevertheless, my friend was very much like a combination of Clifton Webb, a little dash of David Niven, but much younger. But he was patterning himself after these gentlemen. And he did such things at the age of 22. Have you ever known a guy at the age of 22 who walked around wearing a Homburg hat? That's enough to run you want to make you kill him. He wore a Homburg hat, and he more than that, listen to this one, he wore a pearl gray doe skin vest with pearl buttons, and he always wore these shirts that had detachable collars. Now that takes guts. He wore detachable collars. I had never known anybody that wore these things. And he wore blue shirts, elegant blue shirts, real light blue, with white stiff collars. And he wore a foulard tie, one of these big ties that sort of fluff out like that. And he always looked like he was vaguely dressed up either for a funeral or a wedding. It's hard to tell. And he wore a black Homburg hat. And he wore these elegantly cut striped pants. And I hate to say this, I think he even wore a cutaway coat. If he didn't, he radiated cutaway coat. He radiated it. And, well, he did such things as, we had elegant diction. So one day we went into a department store, and he also was basically subversive. Now, this guy was working. He was a radio and television type. So he was an announcer, an elegant voice. But he had this perfect diction. And he had a mustache that looked a little like Clifton Webb's mustache. He patted himself on Clifton Webb. And so on this one day, we went into a department store. And it was raining out. And, you know, there's a typical girl working behind the counter there. And she comes up to us, and it's in the raincoat division, where they had sold raincoats and umbrellas and all that. It's raining out. And so my friend says, may I see a bumper shirt, please? And she says, what? You know, what? He says, I would like to look at bumper shoots. And she says, what? And again, he says, you, of course, carry bumper shoots. At which point she says, Miss Kinley. Yeah, she didn't know what the hell a bumper shoot was. And over came this tall, skinny dame. You know, looked like she was made out of copper wire or something. And she comes walking over, and she says, what do you want? And this girl says, so you want something? At which point my friend says, yes, I'm looking for something in the nature of a bumper shoot. And she says, you mean an umbrella? He says, yes, if you care to call them that, yes, bumper shoot. And she says, what kind do you want? You want a folding one? And he sort of drew himself up, and he says, I'm looking for something with a short sword in the hand. Well, he said it with such authority. She just sort of stood there for a second. She says, a what? He says, I'm looking for a bumper shoot with a short sword in the handle, please. And he looks so official. You know, it's like arguing with Henry Kissinger. You know, you just say, oh, look at a cougar bird here. You know. So she went and got a floor walker, at which point the floor walker came over, and he had a rose and a lapel and the whole works, see? And he says, yes, is there anything I can do for you? And, boy, you know, my friend is not going to be put down by any floor walker. As a matter of fact, he was sort of a concussant of floor walker himself. I mean, he could have been one of the greatest floor walkers or butlers in the history of the world. So he turns to the guy and he says, I really have no idea why I'm having so much difficulty getting my ideas across to the help here. I'm merely looking for a bumper shoot with a short sword in the handle, perhaps a dirk. The guy says, you mean a sword in the handle? My friend says, yes. It's, well, I think you'll find that down at the sporting goods store. We don't carry no swords here. And at which point my friend just said, sniffed. Well, I thought this was a department store for the discriminating. And we both let the had to play it absolutely straight. See, he had such a way about him that you just couldn't crack up and laugh. So we both stalked out in dudgeon, in high dudgeon, in fact. I personally am not too good at stalking out, but he could stalk, I'm telling you. So we went out, and about an hour later, he pulled another one. It's one of these, you know, remember, he's an elegant man. He wears these elegant coats. In fact, he had a top coat that had a velvet collar. Have you seen the kind with the tweed, like, with a velvet collar? Well, he always wore a velvet collar, and he always was carrying a thing hanging over his arm. It was like a short umbrella or a stick or something. He's really elegant. And he had this dark Homburg hat. So we go into the Purple Cow. You know, a man going into the Purple Cow, right away you're giving up some dignity right there. Going to eat in a place called the Purple Cow, right? Have you ever seen the Purple Cow? You have not. Well, this is a chain that is very big in the Midwest. And they have a slogan on the wall that says, a Purple Cow. I hope to never see one. You heard that famous bad... you don't know that. All right. So we will not burden you with that. That's an American literaryism by a man, another Indianan, by the way, named Burgess Gillette, who invented this bad piece of doggerel that deals with a purple cow. Now, we go into the Purple Cow, and they had a thing in the Purple Cow, and that was this. You got as much coffee as you wanted. You know, the bottomless cup type concept. And so the minute you would order a cup of coffee, you'd drink the coffee, and the girl would come over and pour another cup of coffee. And their big dish at the Purple Cow was buttermilk pancakes. You know these little ones? Well, on this particular day, my elegant friend, this place is crowded, he's sitting there, and he orders buttermilk pancakes, and he's ordering the coffee, and the coffee comes, and he eats a couple of buttermilk, and very fastidiously, with a fork in the pinky up, he eats a couple of the buttermilk pancakes. Has about 10 of them on the plate, you know, and they're all laying there in a little stack. And very carefully then, he turns to me and he says, great Scott, do you know what time it is? Do you realize that we're all, 10 minutes late already? Great Scott. And he says this, everyone can hear him. And at that point, and this was a U-shaped counter, these people are facing us, at which point then, he takes the buttermilk pancakes, one by one, and rolls them up and makes them into tiny cigars and puts them into the breast pocket of his elegant his elegant top coat. Never cracked a smile. And he puts the and like a little roll of cigars. Instead of that, they were a little roll of buttermilk pancakes. And, of course, everybody's face drops. And that we walk over to the counter, and he says, you don't mind if I pick up your check? He says, after all, what the hell? You can't take it with you. And I said, fine. And he paid for my pancakes. And he said to the girl behind the counter, he said, you'll notice I'm taking my pancakes with me. I am a little short of time. And she just sort of looked at him with a dumb, glazed look, and we left. All right, he was that kind of guy. You see the kind of man he was. Very elegant. By some trick of fate, this creature of true elegance, and I say that fate is that way so often. It hurls us into areas we should never be hurled into. For example, I have known professional football players, Al, with the soul of a poet. I have known poets with the soul of a professional wrestler. They should not have been poets. They should have been wrestling, in the Fed Forum. So fate is like this. It just hurls people. Well, my elegant friend, of all things that would have happened to him, he should have been, for example, he should have been Eric Severide. He had, was that, he's that kind of intelligence. He should have been giving commentary on the news. And he would have done it with great style. Considering the Middle East situation tonight, it has come to my attention, and it has crossed these editorial desks, that the following, he could have done this with such aplomb. Because he wore a Homburg hat. He was a man of great style and grace. But what happened to him? He did a thing every Saturday morning for 2 hours. A kid show. And you want to know what it was called? It was called The Crocodile and His Friends. Okay. Now, he wasn't even the crocodile. That's what made it sad. If he was the crocodile, that would have been all right. But he was the friend of the crocodile, the friend. And the crocodile was a great big plastic puppet.
Well, if it talked like this, he was a crocodile. And they'd say, hello, how are you?
And he was kind of a good kid.
Quack, 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 quack.
He'd go, and he was always snapping. You know how crocodiles are. And my friend would come in with, bop, bop, his big old beak would go. And at the end of every crocodile joke, my friend would feed him a hamburger. Now, the reason he ate a hamburger was because they were sponsored by Big Boy Hamburgers at the time. You know, this is, can you imagine anything more humiliating for a man of good taste to be feeding Big Boy Hamburgers to a rubber crocodile every Saturday morning with the whole world looking on? Well, this is what he had to do. Well, they used to have little guests on the show. He talked to the crocodile. Now, why he was compelled to wear this costume, I do not know. He was compelled to wear, by the producers of this fiasco, he was compelled to wear a costume that looked a little bit like Prince Valiant. It was kind of medieval, you know? And they had a wig on him that was a kind of a wig, you know, that Prince Valiant wears his hair cut off like a football helmet, like. And he would come out with these tights and a buskin, and he had these silver pants and long stockings and shoes with buckles. And he was called a friend. And he talked to the damn crocodile. And of course, the crocodile had other friends. He had a hippopotamus, you know, named Fatty, of course. And before we get to the denouement, we have another commercial. I'm sure you'll love it.